Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Road to Recovery group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Wayne and I'm an alcoholic. Gives me great pleasure to introduce our final speaker, Cindy C. from the Pacific Group.
Hi, my name is Cindy Coleman and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Cindy.
Wayne, I'm sorry, remind me, am I talking 20 or 30 minutes?
25.
25. Oh, okay. I was not right on either account. Okay. Thank you. I'm glad to be here. I want to thank Wayne for asking me to share with you this evening. I am from California. I live in the high desert, a place called Yucca Valley, California. And I don't know what I can add to the previous speakers. I mean, they nailed it for me. The last speaker I identify with, because not drinking is not enough. When I am not drinking, I'm left with everything that drove me to drink in the first place. So sobriety never looked like an answer for me. And sobriety didn't feel like an answer before I started drinking. And when I drank whiskey, oh my God, it did so much for me. It allowed me to integrate into society. And I'm reminded often that my sponsor's sponsor used to say, I could not integrate myself into society. And that's the way I felt. I could not make myself fit. And when I drank whiskey, I felt like I fit. I felt like I belonged at last. And it was all an illusion. But I drank not for a long time, but I drank for several years, and I drank so hard and so much and so fast that by the time I got to AA, I was severed from humanity. And that's where drinking took me. I had no meaningful connections whatsoever. On my last drunk, I had two girls come over that hadn't come over in a long time, and they brought a fifth of Southern Comfort, and I drank mine. I drank what was left in the bottle, and I went into a 3-day blackout. And during that blackout, I was taken to the emergency room because my father thought I had overdosed on pills, which I didn't do pills because they're dangerous and they can kill you. So it wasn't pills. I just had been drunk for too many days straight and my body quit working. I've been sober since March 10th of 1977. So you don't have to do the math. That's 43 years. And I'm only 36 years old. So that's kind of the miracle of AA, and a testament to the great program I work. But now I was 15 when I got sober, 2 months before my 16th birthday, and there weren't a lot of young people in AA. And I got sober before rehabs sprung up everywhere. I think there's probably a lot of people in rehab right now because in America, it's like one of the few places you can get toilet paper. I don't know why with this COVID thing, like toilet paper has disappeared. So I think a lot of people are in rehab just so they can get toilet paper. But anyway, it was pre-rehab when I got sober. Like I said, sobriety did not look like an answer for me. I grew up in a place called San Bernardino, California. And I think people refer to it now as the meth capital of the world. It's been run down over the years. And I just remember feeling out of place all the time. As you can tell, I'm half Caucasian. The other half is Eskimo. And there weren't a lot of Eskimos in San Bernardino. And there are none of them now. And I just felt out of place there. I couldn't stand the way my eyes were almond shaped. They were slanted. And I can remember coming home from school and kind of stretching my eyeballs out. So they would become round. And I started smoking pot and they just shrunk right back up again, you know. And that was the only drug I really did a lot of was marijuana, but I love whiskey. I'll drink whatever you have, but I love what whiskey did for me. I love the effect produced by alcohol. It conviviality. I mean, I felt joyous to be around other people. And when I'm sober, I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. And I felt that way long into sobriety as well. But when I drank the whiskey, I just loved you so much. I mean, you meant everything to me. I think Chris, one of the 10-minute speakers, was talking about rocking. And it reminded me, oh my God, I used to love to drink and just rock with people and just tell them how much I loved them and how much they meant to me and talk about the meaning of the universe. My father got sober before I did. My father was a probation officer. So he handled drunk driving cases, and he decided one afternoon to go to an AA meeting because he was sending all of his clients there. And he's been sober ever since. So he's been sober 45 years. And my stepmother, her birthday's in a few days, her AA birthday, and she'll be sober 44 years. And I have 43 years, and my little brother has 42 years. So we're a sober family, and life looks a little bit different today than it once did. But anyway, my dad had to carry me that night of my last drink into the emergency room. Like Catherine, they were getting ready to pump my stomach, but I did it for myself. All over my dad, all over the doctor, I sat up and I said, "Oh, F, I'm drunk again," because I had not intended on getting that drunk. But something happens to me when I drink alcohol. It triggers something in me wherein I want more alcohol. And that doesn't happen to every drinker. And that's one of the distinguishing characteristics for alcoholics. So if you're new, that was one of the ways I could tell I certainly was not a normal drinker, you know, because once I drank, I needed to have more of it. But that last drunk, when my dad carried me into the emergency room, I came out of that blackout the following morning for just a few minutes. And I remember my dad picking my face up off the toilet seat because I was told I slept in the bathroom my first 2 days of sobriety with my head up on the toilet bowl or just on the cold tile floor wrapped around it. But he picked my face up and he poured buttermilk down me, which is a horrible product. But I don't know why they gave it to newcomers back in the 70s to give them some nourishment. But of course, I threw it right back up and I looked up at him and he was crying. And he didn't say anything and I couldn't. And I went back into the blackout. The last time I came out of that blackout, that was on a Friday night when I went into the blackout, and I came out of it for the last time on Monday night when they were shoving me into the back of the Chevy Nova and they were taking me to Pomona to the Triangle Club for my first meeting. And I was still shaking and sweating and throwing up. And I don't remember anything anybody said. I remember after the meeting, somebody came up and talked to me and, oh, it's crazy. I currently am on sponsor number 11, but I've had the same sponsor for 39 years. So it tells you a little bit about my early sobriety. I was, you know, reluctant to take direction. So I plowed through 9 sponsors in my first 2 years. And then I got sponsor number 10, who lasted a couple of years until she moved away. And when she moved away, I asked Clancy, my current sponsor, to sponsor me. And, you know, when I was new in AA and my dad was sober, and I told you my little brother got sober behind me, we used to get in the car and follow and find out where all the speakers, the big circuit speakers, were talking. And we would go listen to Chuck and Clancy and Norm Alpe, and Johnny Acklin, all these different speakers that we were blessed to have when I got sober. And I remember Chuck C saying about his wife, you know, his wife, who was not an alcoholic, would say to him, "If you loved me, you wouldn't do it." And Chuck's response was, "It's because I love you that I do." And I understood that because I had so much guilt and shame about the way that I was drinking that when I could face it, I drank over it. So I drank to overcome my drinking, if that makes sense. But I would hear Chuck C talk, and when he said I could not integrate myself into society, I identified with that. You know, I'm someone who is like hyper aware of how I'm doing, and just extreme self-centeredness, which our book talks about selfishness and self-centeredness that we believe is the root of our troubles. And it certainly is the case for me. And it took a good amount of work in AA to reduce the amount of self. And when I first came in, I was surrendered to some extent, but then my ego woke up and didn't give me peace for a lot of years. And I remember Catherine was talking about doing a crash at about 12 and a half years sober. And the exact same thing happened to me at 12 and a half years sober. I had gotten married to this boy I had a crush on, and I met him under the circumstance of being in AA, and his girlfriend was in Hawaii. So I made my move, and we got married and had a son, but it was a crazy relationship. And unfortunately, John went out and got loaded and never got sober again. He choked, asphyxiated during an overdose, and has been dead for 22 and a half years. And he died when our son was 10 years old. And AA walked me through that. You know, whatever you're going through, there's nothing that a drink will make better if you're an alcoholic like I am. And somebody was talking about inventory and feeling connected again afterwards. You know, I had to look at all this stuff that my disease did for me and did to me. And that was the stuff that appeared in my inventory. And I remember my friend GW saying, inventory is a process of discovering who you are not. And those are all the things that showed up on that inventory were things that I had to go make amends for and had to clean up my past and clean up the current past in sobriety, even causing wreckage, so that I could live with myself. And that's what I found AA has done. It has enabled me to live with myself. And Chuck, my sponsor, used to say, you're the only one you have to live with. You are stuck with yourself ad infinitum. And I have found a way where most of the time I can live with myself, you know, and I'm still an alcoholic. I'm still a human and I have human emotions. I can go from 0 to 100 in a heartbeat. You know, I'm someone who can sip on a cup of Italian roast coffee and go, oh my God, this is the best coffee in the entire planet. I'm so glad I'm alive to drink coffee. And then in the next minute, think, why live? What's the point? You know, I have that kind of thinking where the gray area is sometimes very short. And if anything, I guess the gray area has gotten a little bit longer and longer, you know, where I can turn the thoughts outside of myself and still take things personally. You know, I was at the doctor somewhat recently, and, you know, he looked at me and he said, you look anemic. Well, I took it personally, you know, so I'm like, hey, you look anemic. And he's like, no, I'm making a diagnosis. I'm like, oh, okay. So maybe I'm anemic, you know, but just take things personally. And the book talks about it. It says that we are sensitive. And when the book talks about it, the book doesn't mean it as a compliment. It doesn't mean that I'm sensitive to you. I'm sensitive about myself. And the whole idea, I think, is to shift it so I become sensitive to you. And I remember when I was like 29 years sober, finally dawned on me what my purpose in life was. And the purpose was to love God and help people. And I was so disappointed in that revelation. You know, I wanted it to be about something big, like being a rock star, you know. And it's dawned on me since that time that it's not really to love God and help people, but it's to help God and love people. And that's an area of my life that I've always had difficulty with, is human relations, because I am so self-centered. And AA has done for me over a long period of time what alcohol did. You know, I do have meaningful connections today. My son is now 33 years old, and I have two beautiful grandchildren that I'm in love with. And I can attune myself to other people. And I told you, I've been with my sponsor for 39 years, and I'm blessed to have Clancy as my sponsor. He understood me in a way that very few, I think, could have understood me. And I called him 6 to 12 times a day for about 3 years. And just my emotions were just always so intense. But, you know, he gave me these actions, and one of the 10-minute speakers was talking about it. You know, it wasn't my thinking changed first. The actions that I took changed my thinking. And it doesn't matter what you feel or what you think. You know, our book talks about it, that we worship sentiment, things, people, money, even ourselves. That's the sentiment. You know, I worship how I feel. And I mistakenly went through life and used my feelings as the measuring stick for how I'm doing. And how I feel is just how I feel. The thing that's going to change my life is taking actions. And when you're new, there are actions that oftentimes don't entirely make sense. And we're asking you to go on blind faith, and trying to reassure you that it will be okay. And I promise you, it will be okay. But there are a lot of people in this virtual room. I love this group. I had the blessing to be able to share with you guys. I don't even know how many years ago it was. But there are people in this room that have solid recovery and can work the steps with you and show you the actions that need to be taken. And you'll find a funny thing happen when you turn around and share it with somebody else, and to see them light up and see their lives change. And for some odd reason, you know, people like me, like, I love this quarantine, right? I mean, I'm supposed to avoid people. That's right up my alley. I love avoiding people. But I have come to find out that I actually need people. And, you know, that's quite a revelation. And we all need each other. And at first I was like loving the Zoom meetings, you know, go to the meeting in your robe and nobody knows. But it dawned on me, like, this is what we have available right now. This is saving my life. And it's allowing me to connect. And it's difficult speaking into a phone or speaking into a computer. But I know that there are people out there who are wondering how they're going to not drink tonight. And that's who you're talking to. But I'm glad to be sober. I don't know that I've filled my entire time, but I'm very glad to be here. I want to thank Wayne for inviting me to come and share with you this evening. Thank you.
Thank you.